to the Lizzian Events podcast, and today we have the most special of guests, Claire Hegarty. And Claire is a person of incredible intelligence and somebody who has the most wonderful armory of skills, therapeutic skills available to her. And we were talking about that through the podcast. But first, let's speak to Claire. Hello, Claire. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. I've got an allergy, which I've never had before, and it's made my throat a bit croaky, and I'm just peculiar with it. I've got to have plenty of antihistamines, apparently, but I'm feeling okay, just a bit of a sore throat. Strange thing.
Oh, dear.
Claire, you're going to talk to us about something I think is absolutely fantastic, and I love the title that you've given it. It's Lockdown Unlock. And you say, as it's been such a not easy time for people in many different ways, and the positives are that it's triggered people to make positive life changes that previously, being so busy, acted as a distraction to them. So yeah. Focusing on the positives that have come out of these not so easy times, I think it's a very worthwhile subject for us to talk about. Claire, would you like to kick off and tell me what it's all about?
Yeah, definitely. It's not been an easy time for so many people, not being able to see friends and family, people losing their jobs, people not finding it easy being locked in with, you know, kids 24/7, partners 24/7, because we're just not used to that. And what I've found with many of my clients, many of my students, when they come to me to work with me or train with me, it isn't just something they've been thinking about that day. It's potentially been something they've wanted to act on sometimes for years, never mind, you know, days, weeks or months. And what they'll say is that because they're busy in life and they're out and about and they're looking after kids and work, the busyness is almost like a distraction. And to the point where I have some clients where they never sit still, because when they sit still, then the anxiety comes, the low mood comes, the negative thoughts come. So they can kind of keep pushing through the busyness. Then in lockdown, where people are working at home, have more time on their hands, the positive is it kind of gave people that gentle push into going, right, this really, keeping busy isn't really fixing the problem, it's more like a plaster. And now it's made me reflect on what's important and to take that action to make those changes.
So are you actually suggesting in the first part of this that far from being perhaps a moment in time, a tragedy in history, that many people are considering it as a real disaster, but actually you could turn it into something that becomes a monumental turning point of positivity to your life?
Yeah, definitely. And I always think that no matter how negative a situation is, that there's all, when we come out of it, there's always positives we can take from that. It just doesn't feel like it when we're in the negative space. And like I say, you know, I've never actually yet worked with someone where the day they phone me is the day that the problem was there. It's often been around for a long time. And so it is taking that positives, not just for people that, you know, they want to get well, they want to work on their mental health, they want a career change, for us to appreciate life. Because when we're busy, sometimes we're not taking time for ourselves, we're not taking time for our partners, our friends and family. And I think the positive that's came out of that, because so many people couldn't see their friends and family, is to make more time and more balance in life as well.
Very interesting. I have a friend whose daughter has 5 estate agents' offices. Right. And the first thing that people ask now when they phone up about a property is, how big's the garden?
Yes.
That's a real indictment on the way people are thinking in a different way. I know that Liz and I, we recreated the whole of our garden over the lockdown, and as I look out of the window now from the studio, I can see it, and it gives me immense pleasure to see the amount of work that we've put into it come to fruition. A beautiful lawn and the vegetable area and the renovation of the sheds and all of those things that we did really, really makes a difference. Do you think that there are many people who actually might be the other side of that comment, who may have regretted not taking advantage of the 2 years of lockdown?
Yeah, I do. And it's quite interesting in terms of personalities, because for some people who like a lot of sameness in their life, so it'd be people that may be in the same job for many years, they shop in the same supermarkets, they eat in the same restaurants, they'll potentially find lockdown easier because they'll find it easier to be at home a lot. Other people where they like a lot of difference and variation in their life, so they change jobs regularly, they'd probably never go on the same holiday twice, they're the personalities that would find it more stressful because their jobs would naturally probably be being out and about a lot. So it's interesting to see that dynamic. And then also, like you say, people where they'll reflect back and go, yeah, I could have spent more time in the garden or on my house, or, you know, going out for a walk or whatever it might be. So it's helping people adapt, because although people might not have found it easy being at home, sometimes I speak to people and they go, but it kind of became my comfort zone. And now I'm not that comfortable going back to inverted commas normal as well, because they liked that security of being at home and choosing when they got up and when they did their work. So it's that real transition I'm finding that I'm helping people through in many different ways.
Claire, anybody who is lucky enough to meet you knows that you're somebody who works on many different levels. You have a tremendous balance between your spiritual being and your material being. It's almost as if you interact material, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual in everything that you do.
Yeah.
Now, can I put you on the spot here? As you know, I do sure. Put people on the spot. So in your synopsis, you say that there are many positive ways and many positive outcomes that have occurred from the lockdown and now the move out of the situation. I can only call it situation because I haven't got any other words for it, the situation. So let's just go through it on four levels. I'll give you a brief synopsis before we go ahead. So if, because I know you as a complete person who works on the four levels, material, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual, can I put you on the spot and let's just think about the material, intellectual, emotional, spiritual benefits that we could have, or people could have taken advantage of over the last 2 years. So material first.
Material would be appreciating our house, our money, our cars, our furniture, you know, because I think sometimes when people are always striving for wanting more potentially or better, which is good as long as we appreciate what we have. And often people are not appreciating what they have and wanting something better and almost like wanting the object to please them rather than the objects, the items that we buy add to our happiness. So I think it's important to acknowledge, even if it's not the house that's perfect for you yet or the car that you ideally want, to recognize what you've achieved physically and materially at this point, and also our physical body, because a lot of people go, oh, I'm great at giving health advice, you know, to other people, you know, but not looking after their own physical body as well as appreciating the material that they have in their life as well.
Wow, what an answer. So resonates. so many of those things resonate with me. Fascinating, absolutely fascinating. One of the things that I found throughout of the lockdown situation was that I realized after about 3 months that actually possessions didn't make any use, didn't make any difference. You just carried on without and it worked.
Yeah.
So what would be the intellectual benefits that we could have taken advantage of?
Intellectually, I think it's realizing how strong we are. I truly believe that when we go through difficult times, it's actually because we have the abilities and the strengths to come through it. It just might not seem like that at the time. It's almost like we're tested to the level that we can actually come through. And I think it's realizing how we can use our mind in different ways, because, you know, a lot of people would do online courses or get more books, and the importance of stimulating our mind. Because I always say to people that no matter how old you get and no matter when you get to a position where you can financially retire, always do something, because I think keeping our mind active keeps us young. It's stimulating us intellectually, whether it's voluntary work or studying, whatever it might be. I think that's a real important aspect. And I found that many people found ways to occupy their time, you know, especially people on furlough, so they couldn't necessarily get another job in that sense, and go, I've not got around to reading this book or learning this language. So that's the real intellectual benefit of having more time in a time that's not easy.
I'm a 2 or 3 books a week reader, always have been. If you could see my library and my iPad, it's absolutely massive. And I'm currently reading a great book that Richard Abbott sent to me. And it's almost all to do with spiritual awakening and looking at things in a different dynamic. So yes, you're absolutely spot on. Books are amazing that we had time to read books, and I actually turned it from 2 books a week into 3 during the lockdown. I absolutely adored it. Yeah. So here's the difficult one. Emotional. What was our emotion? Because we were tested, no doubt about it, Claire.
Oh, yes, we were tested.
So emotional.
And emotionally, you know, one of my personal experience is the impact of loneliness, even when you live with other people, in terms of the loneliness of not being able to like connect and celebrate families, with families at birthdays, with families at Christmas, especially if you're used to doing that, which I, you know, the first time I've not spent Christmas Day with my family, and the first time I've not had a birthday, because normally I'd go out for a meal with my parents, and obviously we couldn't do that. And it kind of made me really think about through the lockdowns, there were some months where there were more deaths in male suicide than there were through COVID, but that wasn't sadly as, you know, kind of open to the public. And you often find that someone can appear to be really happy, really successful, and then sadly they're found not alive anymore. And I think it's because people feel that they can't reach out. And that's got to be a real sad place to be in. You could be around as many people in the world and still feel lonely. And I think we all experience that, and especially people who were literally physically on their own in isolation. So then it's reflecting in terms of we've come through it. And so if we can manage through those times, which were very abnormal for most of us, to now rechannel that into making the most out of every moment we possibly can.
Wow. Really, really powerful, interesting thought. But let's go on to the fourth dynamic, the spiritual being. How do you think that the situation, the lockdown situation, or the COVID situation has benefited people on a spiritual level?
I think in many, many ways, because whether somebody is spiritual in terms of studying shamanism or more religions, Christianity, Hinduism, whatever it might be, it might just be being out in nature and connecting with, you know, the earth and the elements. I think that the positive spiritually is it's given people something to believe in beyond the physical. It's helped people to get more rituals or routines like meditation, just to help them to connect with themselves more and believe more in, you know, if we can come through these times that no one could predict, and there wasn't a course you could go on and how to come through it in any way, shape or form, that for people to believe, you know, that there are these bigger positives, and then whatever spiritual path or paths you choose to follow, that if it makes you happy and it gives you strength, then that's really important. And I know that a lot of people, you know, we're searching for, you know, spirituality and just wanting something to give them faith in whichever way works best for each person.
Yeah, I mean, I can say this from the perspective of our shop that we have in Nottingham. Mm-hmm. It is an esoterical type of shop. I've never known so many new people come to it looking for different ideas, whether it's tarot or crystals or meditational CDs, all of these things that people are seeking. You know, there's many, many people out there of many, many age brackets seeking new ways of considering one's deep inner being. I think it's almost like this seed has been set, isn't it? People have had the time to sit and think, you know, what really is the purpose of my life?
Yeah, definitely. I find that on my Introduction to Wizard Secrets training that I do as a workshop at your events, which I'm looking forward to next month. And I find that a lot of people are seeking something. They just don't know what that something is. And quite often the people, maybe their partner, their friends, their family, are not really into spirituality and esoteric. So it can be quite a lonely path. It was for me, obviously, getting into esoterics, NLP, hypnosis as a scientist, you know, and now my friends are all very similar mindset. So I then find when people get together, like at Lizzian events, like on my training courses, and they go, oh, I'm not weird. This is actually quite normal. I just haven't been around the right peer group. So, you know, and I think that for me, anything that helps somebody feel better, anything that gives someone more choice or opens up the possibilities, that's great. And we're all different. We all like different paths. What I love about the different spiritual esoteric techniques that I work with is they blend in really well with NLP hypnosis. They blend in really well with science. And actually, it gives you more tools in your toolkit to draw on to enable us to be more of our, like, so our true self, more of the person we were born to be.
Yeah, it's a really, there was almost a pause there to try and take in all of that information, which is absolutely fantastic. I've been reading a book recently by Zank Makar, and it's called Reality Unveiled. Mm-hmm. And a bit of an obscure book, but my goodness, he qualifies the scientific ideas behind vibrational energy and thought patterns and achievement. And yeah, I started reading it and demolished it in about 2 days. It was a fantastic book. As a scientist, I'm going to just put you, but while it's in the mind, I'm going to ask you what, as a scientist. And people should understand that Claire is a highly degreed scientist of the highest echelon and somebody who's worked in the scientific world professionally. So we're not talking to somebody who's just think they know a little bit about science. Did you have a conflict, Claire, when you first started to get into your esoterical work?
It's an interesting question because when I was at university, I was brought up by the lecturers that chemistry is the answer to everything, which obviously it isn't. But when that's drilled into you, because obviously they're very bought into that model, then I kind of thought, yes, this is the answer. Although from a very young age, I've always believed there's something that makes us so different. Inside, obviously, men and women are different physically, obviously. Yeah. But you know, that what makes us so unique. And when I first discovered NLP, which is pre the internet, and it wasn't a training on NLP, it was a small aspect of NLP, in a training that enabled us to run groups and project management, things like that. And it was about how you can understand how someone structures their thinking by the way they move their eyes. So not what they're thinking, the order and sequence of how they structure their thinking. So do they think in pictures? Do they think in feelings? And I thought, wow, I like that. I've got to get me some more of this NLP stuff. And like I say, the internet is probably very, very new, if not at all at that point. So you couldn't go on, you know, Google and find out more about NLP. You couldn't get access to books. So then that sparked something in me to go, okay, there's other systems out there. And then also, obviously, my own journey when I attended NLP practitioner, the difference the techniques made to me, my confidence, got rid of my anxieties, phobias. So that point was like, okay, this is what I was born to be. Because as much as science is important, it was never going to fulfill me and satisfy me as much as, you know, enabling people to change and transform and then be the person they're born to be. And I've always been brought up in more of the Wiccan traditions anyway, you know, in terms of celebrating Halloween. So it's kind of something that's been in my upbringing as part of the way that my parents are from when I was little. So it was a big transition, and also it felt so right, if that makes sense.
It does, Claire. Something that you might find interesting, I have a friend who's a pharmacologist and works for quite a large pharmaceutical company. And of course, you can't resist the temptation of saying, what do you think about all of this? And he said, I'm not here to say anything about that, Ian. It's not within my remit. What I do from professionally, I can't make that statement to you, because you'll go around and say, oh, well, I said this and I said that. I said, so I can't. He said, but what I can tell you is something that you need to understand. He said that at this moment in time, I feel that science is being raped. And I looked at him and thought, well, what do you mean? He said, the scientist's work is to experiment and disprove information. So we set up an experiment and we check it out, and if something fails, we keep on doing it and we find out the end result of a certain series of ideas. Mm-hmm. He said, so and on that journey we will come across some incredibly wonderful things that benefit humankind, but we also come across hundreds of things that drive us mad and frustrate us because we struggle to understand why. He said, that's what a scientist's job is. He said, and at this moment, as a scientist, and many of my colleagues who are scientists, professors of science, etc., he said, we're in dismay that science is being, he said, actually, I'll quote you. He said, spurious science is being used to prove things that I know as a scientist are questionable.
Yeah.
And that's a scary thing.
It is. And this is the thing about when I was working as a scientist, that statistics are not true and that they can be changed to prove or disprove anything. And that's why I like to advise people to seek information, to ask questions and trust your instincts. Because it's a bit like, just because it's in the papers doesn't mean it's true. It can be a slant on the truth and then changed into something else. Whereas the more we trust our instincts and the more comfortable we are in questioning things to get an informed answer, and then following, you know, what people feel is right for them. Because I think that what's come out of obviously vaccinations and lockdowns is people have very extreme opinions, but then, you know, they can be quite extreme in voicing them, whereas I believe people should do what they believe is right for them and people around them, because the more you push people, they're just going to push back. So, you know, and I think sometimes when people go very, very extreme, it then becomes, you've got groups of people, and I'm all for people having their own opinion. I just think there's a nice and gentle way to share it, and you know, following your gut instinct, following, you know, what you feel is right for you in life as a whole.
Yes, very interesting. Let's come back to the focus of our talk. I had a lovely statement the other day, and I'd like you to comment on it. Somebody said to me, this COVID drama, there's so many actors in it using it as a leverage to be a woe is mo, woe is me. Have you come across that type of thought?
Yeah.
If I'm putting you on the spot, say no, Ian, I'm not going to answer that one.
I'm just being honest. Yeah. You only need to spend 5 minutes on Facebook.
Yes.
Yeah, and what I found really, really interesting is assessing and watching how many people got symptoms after the vaccine compared to how many people didn't. And how many of those are self-employed and how many are employed. Because what I personally did was I didn't read any of the side effects, you know, comes up about this person, that person. I had both vaccines and all I had was my arms a little bit sore. That was it. Whereas other people, now I know obviously some people are already not in great health. And so, you know, that people do have the side effects. Although you kind of think, is this something that needs to be posted on Facebook constantly or all the time? And it's like that kind of wanting the attention, wanting the drama, and you can, like, you know, I'm sorry that you're not feeling well. And, you know, is this helpful is probably the question. Is it helpful? Is it useful? And I think that with social media and with the news, some personalities are looking for an argument. And sadly, Facebook is a way that people can say things they probably wouldn't say to people's face. But with the vaccine, you know, to my clients and students, I explained to them, this is what I did, and they've been symptom free as well. So my belief is if one person can do it, then many more can. It's then the mindset and the approach that we take. But yeah, I think that it's people are, you know, relationships are falling apart because people disagree on things like vaccines or disagree on you should go out, you shouldn't go out. And it's a real shame because I believe that we can work around differences if people want to, and for relationships to end or family relationships to end because people are, you know, both sides of the fence. That's the sad outcome, I think, of lockdown, where it's affecting relationships.
Wow, really major lesson to be learned there. The thing is, I think people do look at other people's comments and use it to verify their own dislike or objection to something. In particular, I've seen it, a lot of confirmational bias used with vaccine. People who are anti-vax will pick up on absolutely anything at all to say don't have this vaccine. People ask me regularly, as you know, in my world there are a lot of anti-vaxxers, Claire.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And people say to me, Ian, what do you think about the vaccine? And I truthfully say, I have my right to my opinion of it. It is my health. And I don't talk about my health to other people. I don't say to you that I've had bruxism for 50 years and that's why all my teeth have got gaps in and God knows what else and have never got to the bottom of it. I don't talk about the other illnesses. I don't knock on my next door neighbour's door and say, I'd like to have a look at your medical records.
Yeah.
I don't do that. That's not where I am. And I would say to you, anybody who wants to have the vaccine, that's absolutely their right. And anybody who doesn't, that is their right too. And I'm not interested in any of the arguments in between the two, because at the end of the day, whatever you put into your body or whatever you allow medical science to put into your body has to be your choice. There are many, many arguments in my mind to say that this enforcement of this vaccine or any medical intervention is abhorrent. You know, the Jehovah's Witnesses for many, many years have fought hammer and tongue in court action after court action to stop children having blood transfusions.
Yes.
And, you know, if we, once we start to erode the fundamental human rights of society, it's a thin wedge that can open too many scary doors for me.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with you that it's people's personal choice. And I'll give you another example before COVID of people attempting to enforce their model on someone else is that I've had clients where they were given a cancer diagnosis, which is awful, very, very sad, and they've wanted to look at holistic treatments, which for me is their personal choice. I think listen to the doctor, follow the doctor's advice, and also we have our personal choice. And they attempted to section the person and say that they were mentally unwell because they wanted to look at other models. And like you say, if it's our body, it's our choice. It doesn't mean someone's mentally unstable if they choose to follow another model. If they choose to follow the medical model, brilliant. You know, again, it's personal choice. And I think that the medical model is, you know, amazing in many contexts. it's also not always the strongest model for mental emotional. And I have doctors that refer their patients to me for that reason, because it's a mental emotional problem rather than a physical problem. And why not dip into all of them? I always encourage people to, you know, draw on as many different systems as you can, the more the better, because they can work complementary. Whereas you do get people where they're like, this way is right and that way is wrong. And that's where you get the conflict, rather than they're all right in context, if that makes sense.
It does. And my friend Dr. B, who is a physician, a general practitioner in the Yorkshire area, always says to me, we are actually failures because people always die in the end, Ian.
We can't stop that, unfortunately, can we?
I think you have to look at, you have to think about that very carefully indeed, doesn't it? Why is death public enemy number one, Claire?
I don't know. And did you know that people actually fear public speaking more than death in the UK as well?
We're out of that one then.
Yeah, it's spiders, public speaking, and death. I think that, because if you think about just coming at it from a different perspective, from a spiritual, esoteric point of view, we pick when we come into this life and we actually pick when we leave. And people can find out when that is if they so choose. My personal philosophy is that we only go when we're meant to, when we've learned everything we need to learn. Death is actually, it's harder for the people left behind, isn't it? Because I believe that we return to wholeness and we go to an even better place. I think that what has people fear death so much is the lead up to it and the quality or potential quality of life from people being ill, you know, going through things like dementia and, you know, not having a good quality of life towards the end. And that, I completely understand that, because, you know, that there are people that we all know of that don't have the best quality of life. So I think it's probably that. Because I think if, you know, Deepak Chopra would say that our physical body is built to last for at least 120 years. So what has people, and the body should actually go through wear and tear, like a car wouldn't last forever, for example. So he would say, you know, what has people die before then is more to do with, you know, their emotions, their mindset, diet, lifestyle. So if we can learn how to look after ourselves as best as possible, mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually, it has the potential that we can have the best quality of life as close to the point when we die. And I think that helps people shift their perspective on death.
Doesn't it just?
Yeah, because I do, you know, it's sad when people die. Absolutely, of course it is. And no amount of learning any personal development techniques makes that an easy process, not at all. I think that it's, we don't talk about death. We don't, you know, when I'm working with my clients around who are going through grief, it's such a personal process. People have so many different ideas. Whereas I think if we talk about these things more, it becomes less of this stressful topic. Because like you say, it is part of life cycle. We can't stop it happening. What we can do is appreciate the life and have the best quality of life we possibly can while we're here.
Fascinating. How do you feel about when people say to me, what's your feeling on death? I'll say, I'll explain it this way to you. One, it's like a final sleep to my mind. And secondly, I'm not going to have a funeral or a wake. I've already paid for the disposal of my body, and my body will be taken to Worcester to the simple funerals, where it will be incinerated, and Liz will get the ashes back, recorded delivery, that will just going to be thrown in the sea. That's the end of the story. That's how I see it. And I think the simplicity of that is just, it frees me from any consideration. But you are right about it is the journey to the final sleep, which fears a lot of people. If ever there was to my mind, a justification for euthanasia, it was when I watched my father die in a 3-month period with bone cancer, and the agonies that man went through. I did say to Mrs. Chan, the oncologist who was looking after him, there's no hope here, is there? And she said, no, absolutely not. Your father will die from this disease, this industrial disease that he's got. And it's the most aggressive cancer I've seen for many, many years. And so, you know, at that marker. But what I have to say is, if you'd have put it to poor William when he was in that palliative care ward, right, we're going to turn you off, Dad, he would have absolutely gone crazy. No, I'll fight to the last minute. He just did not want to die, and so we're all different, aren't we?
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think we're kinder to animals than we are to humans. And I know it's not easy, because people can come through, miracles can happen, and it's not an easy judgment call. Although, for me, quality of life is better than length of life, in my personal opinion. And it's interesting you saying about your plan, because what I want to do is go up in a firework.
Brilliant. And have a big absolutely party. Fantastic.
So we're gonna have a big party on the beach and a big firework display. You know, that's what I want. And again, you know, these things people don't talk about, but for me it's a celebration of life.
Yes.
And many cultures around the world wouldn't mourn, they would celebrate life, because they believe a person, like you say, it's the final sleep, we return back to wholeness and on the next stage of our journey. So for example, the ancient Hawaiians didn't believe in reincarnation. They believed all your ancestors walked with you. And I love both beliefs. So my personal belief is that when someone's not with us physically, they're still with us just in a different form, and they're on the next stage of their spiritual esoteric development, and that we can chat with them inside anytime that we want.
Yes, I think we can. I mean, for me, I firmly believe that you can settle your mind down and get an answer to any question if you ask the spirits that surround you. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah, and you know, this is why it's fascinating that lockdowns have caused people to look more, like you say, whether it's crystals, whether it's the tarot, whatever it might be, to enable people to open up their mind and their senses and their connection with the world, the universe, however you might want to describe it, to realize that they have more to tap into than they probably realized that they did.
Yes, I agree with that. Claire, let's move on to another idea. What guidance or what suggestions would you give people for their futures? How do you think they should approach and review their lives around them?
I think that most people in their heart of hearts know what they really want. It's not the not knowing, it's the making it happen and the changes that they might have to change and the emotions that come with that, completely understandable. So a great way to reflect on this is to write a story, whether it's a metaphorical story or whether it's like you were writing, you know, it literally about your life. And where you want your journey to go. Because sometimes when we do that, or even write a movie of how you want your life to be, because often when we do that, it gives us the positive emotions rather than the scary emotions that might come with, oh my gosh, I want to change career, I want to set up a business. And obviously that can bring up fear for people, for example. Whereas if you write a story or a movie about your ideal life, and notice how good that feels, that helps to give you the motivation to take those steps that aren't always easy to really start to have the quality of life that you want in every aspect of life.
So would you say that in the story you could make chapters of it and say, this is where I am now, this is what I need to do? So you could actually write about finding another job or another qualification or learning a new skill, whatever it is, and then actually putting those into your life and then write about how you transformed yourself from XYZ who worked at the cinema into ABC who became a tip-top car salesman.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did this on a training course many years ago, which was working with the archetypes. One of the reasons why we all like movies and books and fairy tales and stories in different senses is they activate archetypal energies, archetypal personalities. So you'll notice that, for example, there's the kingdom and then the warrior or the warrioress will go out to achieve something and they've got to fight the dragons and then they get the prize and then they come back. Well, that's an archetypal explanation of life. And it might be we do that every day. It might be we do that once a week or once a month, depending on where we are. And when we activate these archetypes within us, then, which is why adults like Harry Potter. Harry Potter's not just for kids, is it? It's for adults as well, because of the archetype of the magician and magic. So yeah, you can write it in chapters, which also, as well as getting us in touch with the positives, it helps us, you know, coming back to what we talked about earlier, realizing what we do have and realizing how far we have come, and celebrating that, because often people don't do that, especially people that have this perfectionist mindset, which I used to. So you achieve something 99.999%, but you're metaphorically beating yourself up for the tiny little bit that wasn't perfect, rather than acknowledging, wow, I've actually done all this and look at what I can do. So yeah, writing stories and movies, metaphors is a really powerful way to work with the unconscious mind. And Milton Erickson, who I teach his hypnotherapy, and he's still considered one of the world's best hypnotherapists, even though he passed away many years ago, he would work a lot with metaphor. So there's a chap that was in a lot of pain through illness, and the you know, the painkillers weren't helping him, and obviously wasn't in having good quality of life. So there's a story about Milton Erickson created this metaphor around what this guy loved doing, which is tending to his tomato plants. So he wove this metaphor around something that really this chap really loved doing, and it helped massively to reduce the pain he was experiencing. So, you know, it's a real simple thing you can do, pen and paper, and be very, very powerful to help us, you know, transition and move through life changes.
Do you think that people can completely change their lives at any age of their journey?
Absolutely, I do. Because I was talking about this on my show this week, that people have certain beliefs around age and what's possible, or age and abilities, or age and memory. And the beauty of techniques like NLP and timing therapies, we can change those beliefs. Because for every person that goes, oh, I can't do this because I'm 60, for example, there'll be lots of 60-year-olds that are doing the same thing they want to do. And again, if one person can do it, it's tapping into what's their mindset, what's their belief, so that we can do it as well. So, and absolutely, you know, and I have some clients and students at all different ages. And also, I think as well, it's when the time is right, because often people say to me, oh, I wish I'd found you 20 years ago. It might not have been the right time. They might not have learned what they need to learn or come through what they need to come through. So I think it's that balance between, yeah, we can make changes at any age. And also there's always learnings that we're getting from situations, positive and negative, that help us be stronger and more equipped moving forward.
Yeah, because there's plenty of examples of early or late teenagers, early 20s, people in their early 20s have actually gone on to become millionaires, and they've only done that in a 5-year period. So somebody who's got a life of experience and knowledge, they could quite easily amass quite a minor empire if they study carefully the ways to think and the ways to work to prosperity. Do you think there is a thinking pattern to prosperity?
I do. I teach these styles of thinking to my clients and my students, that if you look at successful people, you know, in all different forms of life, and I mean successful financially, successful in a family, you know, successful in relationships, they tend to have common thinking patterns or common mindsets. Obviously we're all different. I think one of them is not buying into our own excuses, and taking the problem inside to fix it. Because a lot of people, so for example, you get a lot of successful entrepreneurs that will readily admit they left school at 12, 13, they didn't do well in school. But then you've got people that go, oh, because I didn't do well in school, I can't be successful. Yeah, different mindset. So I think that taking responsibility is important, and realizing we're human, we have bad days, we might get excuses, and realizing that it's just an excuse, and getting ourselves what we describe as back at cause, back at a choice point. and taking the feedback. So have you heard the phrase that feedback is the breakfast of champions?
I have, actually.
Yeah. And the story of Greg Louganis, the diver, where he says that, you know, when you hit the sweet spot on the dive board, you know you're going to have a perfect dive. But that can be the sweet spot in life, but rarely do you take off on the sweet spot. So he said anyone can get from the right place to the right place. It takes a champion to get from the wrong place to the right place, and what makes us do that is feedback. And I think that's just like a real empowering way to think, whereas often people go, I didn't achieve this, therefore I can't achieve anything, as opposed to, okay, well, it probably just wasn't the right path, or you don't have enough skills yet that you can learn, or you need some mentoring and guidance. And like I said, literally adapting your journey, because I always use the example of, say my clients always drive the same way to come to clinic, and they come to me in the morning, the road's closed, and they didn't expect it. So I say, would you sit there for 2 weeks until the road's opened again? They go, no. So what would you do? I'd find a different way to get to you. Exactly. And that's just what life is like. So I think that people that are successful don't always achieve everything they want. I'm not saying they have a perfect life. They just take the feedback so they achieve more prosperity and more of what they want more consistently.
My goodness, you made a couple of interesting points there that really resonate with me. I have been fortunate to work with some very, very successful people over my life, and particularly over the last 20 years or so. And there is two things that I'd like to just mention here. One, I'm absolutely convinced that the majority of really successful people actually are able to delegate, and if they're not very good at doing one thing, they'll get somebody in who is good at it.
Yeah.
They do never attempt to try and do everything. Delegate is the key.
Yeah.
And because they can delegate, they demonstrate trust in people. And that also demonstrates the fact that they are open-minded and they're able to listen, because you'll see so many people get to a certain stage in their success module, so be it work or family, whatever it is, and they have an astounding success, and then it all falls through the floor because they take on too much and they use the same system in everything they do, and it fails.
Yeah.
But the other thing I'd like to say to you, and it's really interesting that you're talking about journeys. I had a friend, Victor M, and he owned a massive PLC. He was a chairman of it. He started it. It was his, and it became a PLC. And I'd known him for a long, long time. And he liked a glass of beer, as I do. And I said to him once, Vic, what do you think? Is there a secret to where you're at? And he said, oh, yeah, absolutely. He said, but you won't understand it until you get a lot older. And I said, what is it? He said, it doesn't matter what day it is or what I've got on. I never, ever drive to work using the same route, even if I've got to go 6 or 7 miles extra. And I never return home on the same route either.
Yes.
And he said, that is my daily meditational lesson. You don't have to take the same route every day. And I've never forgotten it. And it's something that I've chosen. And as you know, I don't mind at all changing my ideas and darting around, trying things out that sometimes win and sometimes fail. And I think that's a great way to be.
Yeah, it's like, you know, Einstein said, wasn't it, that he said doing the same thing over and over again expecting a different result is one of the definitions of insanity. So it's shifting that perspective around achieving results, whatever that might be for each individual, that if you go for something and it didn't work, do something different and keep doing something different for as long as it's working. And if it's not working, stop doing it and do something different. Whereas what a lot of people do is they bang their head against the wall going, oh, I'm getting a headache. Well, stop it. You know, that's the way kids are. That's the way our unconscious mind naturally works. We experiment, we explore rather than thinking there's only one way. So if you do something that doesn't work, then that just shows you that that path isn't the right path. Find a different path. And learn and adapt. And so I think that that's, you know, those kind of common mindsets are with people who are successful. And even, you know, talking about journeys, even if you do the same journey every day, it's never actually the same journey because you're wearing different clothes, you're listening to something different on the radio, you'll see different cars. So even then, every day is different, which gives us that perspective around we don't have a good day one day, it's just that day. And then we can start at it again tomorrow with a fresh mindset.
Yes, I think so. And another thing that a little snippet somebody gave to me about being successful was always go to bed on the same day you got up. and that has quite a few inferences, really, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah, it does. Sometimes that's not always easy depending on the hours you work. And yeah, I think, you know, sleep, I would say looking after your physical body. When successful people are, you know, asked that, they'll always say, you know, supportive people around you, that's really key. Looking after yourself physically, mentally and emotionally. The importance of routine and ritual. You know, a lot of people say even something like making your bed every morning. Yeah, very simple, but it helps you get to that routine to get into a good mindset, because I find what people do is they have a day where they wake up a bit grumpy, they didn't sleep well, and they're in a bit of a grumpy mood. My advice is do something to change that mood before you start your day, whether it's meditation, whether it's chatting to a friend, whether it's listening to music. Because if you go into the day with a grumpy mood, what's the likelihood you're going to have a grumpy day? And then we're not effective in how we're doing things. Whereas if we invest 5, 10, 20 minutes, how much ever time you can, to shift your mindset, you're going to have a more productive day.
I sometimes travel on the bus into work, and sometimes I travel with Liz and she drives me into work. And when she drives me into work, there is a particular place on the A52 just after the off the Priory roundabout in Nottingham, and it's got one of these crazy filters where people come off the roundabout and they all try and get in and cut up, and every single day I see people. They wind themselves up beyond comprehension because they've got to get in the car in front. And they will have, I watched them in the mirror. They approach, you know, 10 cars back and they want to take this place in front no matter what. You've seen it. Everybody's seen this across the world. And you see them a mile and a half down the road at the other roundabout. And you just zoom on by up the inside lane because you're going into the city and they're going somewhere else. But the question is, Claire, they see this time and time again. They get themselves wound up for the day ahead. Why don't they just do what I do when I drive? And as you know, I'm not very keen on driving these days, so I don't do very much of it. I always let people in. I just say, oh, get on with it. Get on with it. You know, and I just let them keep going in. And the people behind get frustrated because thinking, why are you bloody letting all these people in? Because I don't want to get wound up by these people who are in aggression mood six. But why do people consistently do something that winds them up? Why doesn't everybody get into the filter in turn situation?
I know. I see what, you know, working in London and people are stuck at traffic lights and literally they're like honking on the horn, their face is bright red, there's steam coming out their ears, and you feel like saying it isn't going to make the lights change any quicker. But I think it's because we're not taught, unless we go looking for it, we're not taught how to look after our emotions, how to reduce stress levels. So often people are at a point of fullness anyway, because of stress, sadness, negative emotions from the past. So, you know, I describe it like we've got this, you know, if you've got a pint glass full of water, the water is life's experiences, which we all have. we're not taught really, like I say, unless we go looking for techniques like Tamarind therapy, for example, we're not taught how to empty the glass out. So put a little drop of water and the water spills everywhere. But then the more someone's wound up, the more things that will wind them up. And sometimes I think people, it's their personality, and sometimes people just don't realize that they can change that. And then when they realize they can, then whatever path they follow to do that, they can be calm. Because like I say, it's, you know, and often the person that's pushing in front ends up being just one car in front of you anyway. The next traffic light, you didn't really achieve very much by doing that. But then it's probably a pattern that they run in other areas of life as well. And like I say, some people just don't realize that they can change it.
And perhaps I often think that maybe, just maybe, they are bringing their problems of at home or their other issues into their car environment, and that's what it's half of it's all about.
Yes. So it can be like a release as well. It's like you say, if they're not happy at home, they've had an argument with someone before they left, and so it's kind of their way of dealing with that. So by the time they get to wherever they're going, they actually feel a little bit calmer. But I think it's also can be that people are rushing around, they're not managing their time. You know, there's always traffic when you're late. So it can be a whole host of reasons that people can, you know, road rage and things like that can happen.
We could do with a car meditation for people to play, couldn't we? Yes, calm down.
Calm down. Get up a little bit early. Give yourself more time.
You could call it car down, couldn't you?
Car down. Yeah.
Filter in turn. Let the person in front smile, wave, put on beautiful music, get there happy and relaxed, and make your day. Be an example of perfection during the day.
Yeah.
Claire, we're coming up to our hour. And I would like you to give a piece of advice to anybody in the world who is listening to this. And we're fortunate we do have a worldwide audience now on Lizzie and Events podcast. So what would be your message for 2021?
Yeah, I think that no matter how lockdown's been for you, no matter where you are now, acknowledge what you've come through, acknowledge the positives, and whether it's to write the story or wherever it might be, really start to follow your heart and your dreams, even if you don't know yet how to make that happen, because you'll find a way, or you'll find people to guide you, or it might be that a book appears, you know, in an advert on Amazon, something like that. So it's really reflecting on how far you've come, everything you do have that's good, and what are those changes that you want to make, and tap into the positives they'll give you, because that then shifts your mindset to find ways to take the action to make those goals come true.
Wow, very powerful. Claire, how may people contact you?
Yeah, so on my website is probably the easiest way, which is www.clairehegarty.co.uk. And also, I will be at your Stafford event next month. So if people want to come along and have a chat, come to one of my workshops, then they can come and meet me there too.
Yes, and you will find Claire one of the most friendliest and gregarious people you could ever wish to meet. And for anybody who's listening to this from iTunes, you can click the web page link, and that will take you straight to the page where you will find everything about Claire, and you will find all of her contact details and a link to the site if you didn't get that. Claire Hegarty, it has been the most wonderful hour. Isn't it amazing? Time always flies when you're enjoying yourself. It just seems like 15 minutes and we could have spoken for another hour, I'm sure. So
I know.
I look forward to seeing you in September and having a chat with you there. I look forward to listening to your talks, and I'm sure that everybody is going to have a super duper time. Claire Hegarty, thank you.
Thank you for having me.